Stage Dramas present The Unseen Power. This week's front page drama, The Unseen Power, is a dramatization of a real-life story entitled A Kidnapper Who Snatched Only the Mind of His Victim. This most amazing but nevertheless true story is to be found in next Sunday's issue of The American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Early last December, Robert Smith, a very wealthy Australian lumberman, was just about to begin dinner with his 16-year-old daughter.
Well, Eleanor, my dear, what would you like for Christmas? Oh,
you're not my father.
What?
I don't belong in this house.
What?
Don't try to buy my affections with Christmas presents.
Why, Eleanor, what in the world is the matter?
You're not my father. I won't eat with you. You're not my father.
Oh, come, Eleanor, my dear, this isn't like you. Don't you feel well? Wait a minute. Mrs. Harrison. Mrs. Harrison, hurry, please.
I'm coming, Mrs. Smith. Well, what is it? What's wrong?
Go in the dining room and see what you can do with Eleanor. I think she must be ill.
Ill, Mrs. Smith? Impossible. Why, I had brought her down to dinner only a few minutes ago. She was perfectly well.
Well, something is radically wrong. She just jumped up from the table and in a fit of hysterics began shouting that I wasn't her father, that she didn't belong in this house.
That's strange. But I see what is wrong. Come along.
Yes, yes.
Eleanor. Your father tells
me. He isn't my father. I don't belong in this house. I won't stay here.
Why, Miss Eleanor, you mustn't say such naughty things. Now come to nurse and tell me what's the matter.
I won't eat with him. He's not my father.
Now, dear. Maybe we ought to eat in your room so that we can hear that radio program you like so much. Come along, dear.
There, dear. That's a good girl.
I'll be back. And report as soon as he's quiet, Mrs. Smith.
Very well. Now then, Mrs. Harrison, what occurred to the children? What was the reason for that outburst? I never saw Eleanor act like that before.
Neither have I, Mrs. Smith. Firstly, I don't know what to say. As soon as I took her upstairs and got her settled, she appeared to be quite normal again.
Yes.
I insisted she undress and go to bed. Then I gave her a light dinner on a tray. She ate her dinner, listened to the radio for a few minutes, and fell asleep.
And she's all right again?
Apparently. She was sound asleep when I left.
Oh, this thing has me worried, Harrison. I've been so confoundedly busy. Business has taken up so much of my time that perhaps I neglected her too much. I left her entirely in your care. Up to now, she's always appeared wonderfully well and happy.
I've never had to complain about her conduct, Mrs. Smith. She's always been as sweet, obedient, and lovable as any child could possibly be.
Well, we'd better not take any chances. Have Dr. Beach look her over tomorrow. I'll arrange to have him over for dinner tomorrow night and give me a personal report.
I don't think that should be necessary.
What?
Dr. Beach was here late this afternoon. As a matter of fact, he only left a few minutes before your arrival.
Oh, and did he report anything unusual?
Far from it. In fact, he said she was the very picture of health.
Oh. Nevertheless, arrange for Dr. Beach to see her and be here for dinner tomorrow night.
Dr. Eric Beach, Smith's family physician, appeared the next evening for dinner. And when the time arrived for the meal, the doctor and Smith took their places at the table. And then Eleanor appeared in the doorway, glanced in the direction of her father, and began shrieking,
I won't eat with you. I won't. You are not my father.
Please.
I won't eat with you.
Eleanor, please, be a good girl. Sit down and eat your dinner.
I won't. You're not my father. I don't belong here. I won't eat with you.
Eleanor, do as I tell you. Sit down here and eat your dinner.
I won't.
Eleanor, come back. Quick. Come, doctor. She's fainted.
Easy now.
Oh, good heavens. Why did I talk to her like that? It's all my fault.
Easy now, old man. Leave this to me. Don't worry. I'll carry her up to a room.
Oh, please.
You'll be all right. I'll be back shortly.
Well, doctor, how is she? I've got to know. What is it that makes her act this way?
Now, take hold of yourself, old man. It's nothing serious. Young girls often have fits of temper, hysteria, and nerves. I've given her a slight sedative and she's off to sleep. I've left Mrs. Harrison with her.
Good Lord, Doctor, how can you be so matter-of-fact? This thing is serious.
No. Don't you get all upset. This thing will pass over quickly. I've made arrangements with Harrison. Light diet, plenty of sleep, no excitement, complete rest, and the
child will be as right as rain.
Are you sure? Well, please don't take any chances. Call in a specialist, any amount of them. I can afford it. But please be sure she's all right.
Here now. Quiet down. I've been a family physician for 15 years. I know the child like a book.
All right, doctor, all right. I'll quiet down, but she's all I have in this world since her mother died. I couldn't stand to have anything happen to Eleanor.
Well, just let's see what a good week's rest will do, and I'd suggest you stay away from her for a day or so.
Oh?
Let her get over that notion of disliking.
Well, whatever you say, doctor, but keep me well posted on any new developments. And remember, there's plenty of money to spend if you need it.
Weeks passed, but the girl got no better. The weird fixation remained. The one fact stood out. The girl's father personified almost a devil to her, and she could not see him without suffering a relapse. Then, early in January, the strange case reached its second stage.
The gentleman you sent for is here. Detective Inspector Francis of the Criminal Investigation Department.
Yes, show him in at once, Olivier.
Very good. Like this place here? Mr. Smith, the inspector.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Smith.
Oh, good evening, Inspector. That's all, Willoughby.
Yes, sir.
Close the door and see that we're not disturbed.
Yes, sir. The decanter and siphon are on the sideboard.
Mm. Thank you, Willoughby. Now then, Mr. Smith, let's get down to business. And if I'm not mistaken, this is serious business. First, let me see that ransom note you received.
Yes, it's right here, Inspector. And the envelope that came in.
Fairly expensive stationery. First, sometime last night. First marked main first office, 1 a.m. Envelope very clean. That's important.
Oh.
Now, the note. Let the paper matches the envelope. Typewritten message. That was typed on an Imperial regular business machine. Your daughter's mind has been completely alienated and subjugated to my will. Nothing that you or your specialist can do will restore her to normalcy. I only can restore her, and I will do so if she will take £10,000 and build a small denomination at the door of the abandoned mill at Clark's Corner tomorrow night. Very well written. No signature, no mistakes in spelling. And that means we're not dealing with any of the lower order of the criminal element. This person is well educated and probably very clever. I'll keep this. Turn it over to our battalion office.
Well, I'm ready to pay, Inspector. Anything to have my child restored to normal, sir.
Yes, I know just how you feel, Mr. Smith. But I must advise against any immediate payment.
Oh?
Already your daughter's illness and this threat have been played up in the papers.
Huh?
10 chances to 1 some other criminal who has nothing to do with the case may try to cash in on it.
I see.
I realize it's asking a lot, but please put yourself in the case completely in our charge, and I'm sure everything will turn out all right. So, Mr. Smith, since we've ignored that first note, your daughter's condition has rapidly become worse.
Yes, Inspector. I don't mind telling you, I've almost reached the breaking point.
Yes, of course.
I went up to see her early this afternoon. She was, I thought, sound asleep. And I bent over to kiss her, lightly. And as I did so, she pulled a knife she had hidden in the sleeve of her gown and slashed it. Luckily, I was too quickly and escaped injury.
That is very serious. Now, let me see that new ransom note received this morning.
Yes, Inspector, here it is.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Same stationery, same postmark, exactly the same time.
Yes.
Now, let me see. The ante has been doubled. Pay £20,000 as outlined in my last letter if you want to retain your daughter's love. Eleanor is completely in my power. You seem to be a doubting Thomas, so I'll prove my complete control. At exactly 4 o'clock this afternoon, Eleanor will faint and remain unconscious for exactly 1.5 hours.
And do you see the time, Inspector? 3:50, just 4:10.
Very well, Mr. Smith. I propose to be a witness to the experiment. Come, we'll go to your daughter's room at once.
Amazing.
Happened right on the dot at 4. Finished exactly to the minute at 4:30. And now I'm going into action. And I'm almost positive I'll break this case wide open before dinner. So if you'll excuse me, Mr. Smith, I'll get right to work.
Very well, Inspector. I'll leave you.
All right, Mr. Smith, would you mind asking your child's nurse, or governess, Mrs. Harrison, to step in here?
Oh, certainly, Inspector. But I say, you surely don't suspect Mrs. Harrison. Why, she's been here ever since Eleanor was born. Why, she's been a mother to the child since my wife died.
I'm fully convinced the suspect is in this house. It's someone very close to your daughter.
Yeah.
Please ask Mrs. Harrison to come in. And Sergeant Bullock, I have a job for you.
Yes, Inspector.
I want you to slip out of the house quietly and quickly. Go to this address and...
Come in. Oh, Mrs. Harrison. I've got quite a few questions I want to ask you.
Yes, sir?
Quite a few important questions. All ready, Sergeant Buller?
Yes, Inspector. I'll keep your revolver handy in case of emergency. And Mr. Smith, we're going to Eleanor's bedroom and arrest the culprit who has so cleverly been terrorizing you and your daughter. Come along.
All right. Come on out, Mrs. Harrison. Stay right where you are, Doctor. All right, Sergeant, do your duty.
Yes, sir. Why, well, what the devil? Take those handcuffs off me. Is this some weird, ill-timed tactical joke you're playing? Mr. Smith, are you going to allow
me? You might as well stop bluffing, Dr. Beach. Your little game is up now.
Yes, Doctor, I arrest you on a charge of attempted extortion and criminal malpractice. Anything you say will be used as evidence against you.
This is a very stupid blunder, Inspector, and I demand you release me immediately or I'll make you pay for your utter stupidity.
Now listen, Dr. Beach. We've got you dead to rights. We raided your house and office not 5 minutes ago. In both places, we found a number of books, papers, and special reports on the science of hypnotism. Together with a few case histories and notes in your handwriting.
If you're arresting me on that flimsy evidence, you're badly mistaken. I've been studying hypnotism merely to try to cure Eleanor.
A very ready answer, Doctor. Perhaps you can answer why the ransom notes were written on your Imperial D-21 model typewriter. And why the notepaper and envelope fused with the identical band of a box of stationery found in your home.
There are hundreds of Imperial D-21 model typewriters in use. And hundreds of boxes of stationery alike, Inspector.
True enough. And explain why, as Mrs. Harrison has proven to our satisfaction, that she always found that Eleanor was most disturbed almost immediately after each of your visits. And whenever you were alone with the girl or thought you were, continually whispered things in her ear.
Your deductions are all very interesting, Inspector. But don't you think it will be rather hard to convince a judge and jury with such trumped-up evidence? You have no motive for such a crime?
We have a motive, Doctor. You needed £10,000 to balance your bank account and pay off your gambling losses. You see, Doctor, we found a canceled check among your effects made out to the Anzac Sporting Club.
Anzac.
We called them and found out you'd been losing heavily and owed them quite a sum.
All right, Inspector. You win. I am guilty.
Using hypnosis, the unscrupulous physician had literally kidnapped the mind of the millionaire's daughter. He knew that sooner or later he would get any amount of money he asked from the lumber baron. Eleanor has been awakened out of her hypnotic state and has become the happy girl that she was before. She does not remember anything that happened and has never asked for Dr. Beach. She loves her father just as dearly as ever. Dr. Beach is paying for his crime, and general opinion seems to be that no punishment could be too severe. You have just heard the front page drama, The Unseen Power, a dramatization of a true life story to be found under the title, A Kidnapper Who Snatched Only the Mind of His Victim. You will find this and many other interesting articles in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. Join the millions of Americans who each Sunday find the greatest enjoyment in the many fine articles and feature fiction by the world's best writers in every issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each Sunday with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Dramas present Carried a Fortune in His Shoes. This week's front page drama, Carried a Fortune in His Shoes, is a dramatization of a story of the same name, which appears in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, The Nation's Reading Habit. The American Weekly is the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world and comes to you each week as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. carried a fortune in his shoes has not, as the title might suggest, anything to do with the beloved comedian Charlie Chaplin, who has certainly earned a fortune with those battered, weather-beaten, turned-up shoes that helped make him famous. This is the story of Giovanni Scapagna and his shoes, that in appearance were funnier than those of Charlie Chaplin, and to Giovanni, at least, were just as valuable. Giovanni Scapagna was, as his name implies, Italian, but as a young man, he came to France and soon had enough money to open a modest little shoe store in Paris. By his pleasant manner, rather grotesque appearance, especially his big shoes, Giovanni soon became quite a familiar character and drew considerable trade to his little shop in the Rue Constant-Berteau. Then, one day, Madame Boulanger, the butcher's wife, stopped in to gossip at Madame Carpentier's wine shop.
Madame Carpentier, what do you think? Monsieur Bigout is selling his shop.
No.
You don't mean
it? Yes.
Mr. Giovanni wouldn't be there.
Well, it is a truth. I just passed by, and there he was, standing outside, as usual, with his long, turned-up shoes. And I saw the sign, his shop and business for sale. Oh, stop and ask him about it, and he said, yes, he was going to retire.
Wait, he always talks of going back to Italy. Back to a little villa in the sunshine, with a garden and a nice, rich vineyard overlooking the sea. Oh, but I thought that was just a dream of his. I never thought he'd ever go back.
Oh, whatever will we do? This neighborhood will not be the same without Mr. Bigwood.
Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a little girl, he has been standing outside, leaning against the front of his shop.
That's how he built up such a good trade. People going past would look down at Monsieur Giovanni's feet, then at their own, and lots of times would realize they needed shoes.
I would go in and buy them. Did anyone ever find out why Monsieur Giovanni wore such big shoes? Surely his feet are not that big.
I have asked everybody in the neighborhood, and nobody seems to know. I think it's his idea of advertising.
Well, if it is, it is a good one. Mr. Giovanni does a very nice business. And if he is going to sell, he should get a nice price for his place.